It is Thursday, October 27th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, international relief organizations express concern about the civilians in Mosul, Iraq. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump proposes economic boosts for Black Americans.
And so it's to try to split what has clearly been a very strong coalition between African Americans and the immigrant community.
And we tour some of the spookiest Halloween displays here in the Washington area. It's all ahead. The United Nations said more than 10,000 civilians have fled their homes since the beginning of the Iraqi Kurdish assault on the Islamic State-occupied city of Mosul on October 17th. Half are children, and some have relatives outside of the IS-controlled region they haven't seen since IS militants seized the city 2 years ago. Among the groups providing aid to the displaced Iraqis is the Norwegian Refugee Council. Speaking from Erbil, spokesman Carl Schembri tells International Edition's Victor Beatty around 130,000 have been displaced along the Mosul corridor and from Hawija ahead of the operation to retake the city. He was asked about reports concerning withdrawing IS militants are using civilians as human shields.
We are hearing such reports, extremely concerning. It wouldn't be the first time. We've seen this when Fallujah was under attack. We've seen this in other villages on the so-called Mosul corridor where ISIS was in charge. It's one of the desperate tactics they are using and putting the civilians, children, families at extreme risk. Our appeal to all the fighting forces in this operation is to protect civilians. That has to be the number one priority. Establishing safe routes out for these families is extremely important. When that doesn't happen, people start dying and risking their lives.
UN aid agencies say the fighting so far since it began October 17th forced about 10 to 11,000 people to flee.
What we are seeing actually that more people are fleeing in these last days because the Iraqi troops are now getting closer to the city and more highly populated areas. Until then, a lot of the army advances were in villages that were already mostly empty of people. So now people in huge numbers are fleeing overnight to these newly displaced camps.
Carl, there are reports that a significant number of female-headed households are fleeing, raising concerns about the detention or capture of men and boys.
Indeed, that is one of our major concerns. I've been to some of these camps only a few hours ago. I was in Khazar camp, which is around 20 kilometers away from Mosul, in Gayara as well, that's south of Mosul. You see a huge concentration of women and children, and a lot of the men and even young boys are missing or have been separated. People say that men are being rounded up by ISIS to recruit them, to force them into fighting. A lot of the men are terrified, really scared. We have reports of people who are so desperate to flee even into Syria, to the west of Mosul, just because they were fleeing from this terrible scenario, this terrible possibility.
Carl Schembri said his organization is working in three refugee camps near Mosul, providing food parcels, drinking water, hygiene and baby kits, legal assistance, and educational activities for children. The group expects another 200,000 people might arrive in the camps in coming weeks. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's going on?
Well, occasionally we have these stories where social media itself is trending, and that's the case today. Twitter announcing that they're going to lay off about 9% of their staff in an effort to cut costs and try to revamp and re-jump their earnings.
That's quite a few people.
It is. It's a lot of people, and it comes after Twitter tried to find a buyer. They were trying to get sold, and they had interest potentially from Google and Disney and all these companies, and everybody backed away. So they need to find something to do to cut costs, and unfortunately it means cutting labor. The other big Twitter story that's trending is Vine. Now, this is the six-second kind of looping short videos that you can create. And Twitter bought Vine about 4 years ago for $30 million. But they've announced today that in the next couple weeks, they're going to be shutting down Vine. I guess it wasn't profitable. It's hard to compete, they said, with Snapchat and Instagram. So they're going to be shutting down that service. People will still be able to download old videos, and they won't be able to create new ones, unfortunately. So more unfortunate news for Twitter. But speaking of the competitors, Snapchat and Instagram, Instagram is getting one celebrity in trouble for politics, but not in the way you might expect, given that tease. It's, Justin Timberlake went and voted early this past week in his home state of Tennessee, and he posted a picture of himself voting on Instagram and trying to get young people especially out to the polls. Problem with that is that in the state of Tennessee, it is illegal to take a picture in the voting booth and publicize that. And he faced potential jail time or a fine. It looks like he's not going to face either of those things, but the trade-off was that he did have to pull that picture down, and he is getting some negative attention because of that. So good intentions trying to get young people to vote, just maybe poorly executed.
Yeah, read the fine print or whatever.
Yes.
Just be careful.
Yes.
All right. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top stories trending. The EU-Canada trade deal moves closer to final approval. India expels a Pakistani staffer in New Delhi on charges of spying. China's Communist Party has elevated President Xi Jinping's status to that of a core leader. And a man is shot dead outside the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Back in late August, a team of astronomers announced that they had discovered a small planet orbiting the habitable or so-called Goldilocks zone of its star, Proxima Centauri, which is a little more than 4 light-years away, making it the closest exoplanet to Earth. A new study expands on the original findings with more details and suggests conditions on Proxima B actually increase the odds of it being habitable. The researchers say that the nearby exoplanet could be an ocean planet covered with the same kind of subsurface oceans detected inside a couple of moons around Jupiter and Saturn. The study also finds that the planet has a substantial metal core and is about 30% more massive than Earth. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, get ready for some ghostly Halloween decorations. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump is proposing a series of economic measures to help Black Americans, a population that, according to polls, largely supports his opponent, Democrat Hillary Clinton. During a speech Wednesday in Charlotte, North Carolina, Trump outlined plans to make it easier for African American entrepreneurs to get loans and allowing cities to declare blighted sections disaster areas so they can be rebuilt. Carol Anderson is a professor of African American studies at Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. I asked her about this effort by Trump to reach out to Black voters.
I would say that this latest move has a two-pronged strike. One is, again, particularly after his October Access Hollywood tape came available, that just had women flocking away from him in droves. So that's part of it. It is, again, to try to figure out how do I recapture them, or try to capture them in the first place. The second piece is you saw that he was very deliberate in the way that he said, The greatest harm to the African American community has been illegal immigrants coming in and taking jobs. And so it's to try to split what has clearly been a very strong coalition between African Americans and the immigrant community. particularly the Mexican immigrant community, which is exactly who he means. And so that was a way to try to split that coalition and therefore begin to move some of those votes that are in block in mass for Hillary Clinton over to Donald Trump.
One of the things that he said yesterday, he said that too many African Americans have been left behind. But now some people could argue that in this country, a number of African Americans have been left behind as far as, you know, economic success.
Yes, and so the story of African Americans is, I always say it depends on what your baseline is. So when your baseline is having to recover from centuries of slavery and then yet another almost century of Jim Crow, that we are seeing progress. There is no doubt about that. But that progress is very slow and it's very halted by a series of public policies that have been designed to, in fact, undercut that progress. So was it a recent study came out that showed, for instance, that it would take about 228 years for African Americans to equal the wealth of whites in the United States. 228 years. We've got a long way to go, but what Donald Trump is describing is a kind of horrific, unmitigated, unnuanced, in mass dystopian view that really cast African Americans as being so dependent upon government, I can rescue you, that it doesn't acknowledge the incredible strength, the vibrancy, the resiliency, the determination and drive of members in the black community to in fact succeed, to in fact work very hard.
Well, I believe in recent polls, Trump's support among black voters is around, I've seen 3-4%. And this is according to a CBS News poll.
Mm-hmm.
That is a lower percentage than most Republican presidential candidates.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Trump is even less popular than previous Republican candidates.
You know, you've got to work really hard to get less popular than Mitt Romney, right? But Trump has done that. Trump has done that because of the blatant racism coursing through his campaign, by his embrace of white supremacists, by his history of overt, blatant discrimination against African Americans, by his and what I mean by history, for instance, the refusing to rent to African Americans in Trump buildings, where the Department of Justice had to come in twice to get Trump to stop violating the Federal Housing Act. And then there's the Central Park Five, who were four African American teens and one Latino youth who were tried and convicted for beating and raping a white woman in Central Park. Now, Trump took out full-page ads in the New York media, you know, demanding that the death penalty be brought back so that these five teens could be executed for rape. Now, there are several problems with that. One is that the U.S. Supreme Court had found that the death penalty for rape was unconstitutional, in part because that penalty had been overused against African Americans. In fact, in some years, only black men were executed for rape. But we know that black men were not the only ones committing rape in the United States. And so here you have a disproportionate and discriminatory use of the death penalty. But Donald Trump is asking for it to be reinstated. Then when DNA and a confession in fact, exonerate those five teens who have now spent years in prison, so now they're men, Donald Trump calls their release and the settlement that they received disgraceful.
That's Carol Anderson. She's professor of African American Studies at Emory University. This is VOA.
know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. Halloween is the spookiest day of the year in the United States, with people attending costume parties, visiting haunted attractions, and telling scary stories. But on October 31st, Halloween is most well known for costumed children going door to door in the evening, saying trick or treat to receive candy. Traditionally, the only decoration was a jack-o'-lantern in front of the house. But now more people than ever before are elaborately decorating their houses for Halloween. VOA's Deborah Block takes us to some homes with a Halloween spirit in Alexandria, Virginia, outside Washington.
Big things are happening for Halloween at the Crist family home in Alexandria, Virginia, with ghastly creatures emerging out of the darkness.
Fire, burn, cauldron, bubble.
And then there are things just hanging around.
Pray for the dead, and the dead will pray for you.
A couple of weeks before Halloween, 32-year-old Nicole Crist, who lives with her father, starts putting up lights and other decorations.
My love for Halloween started when my dad used to take me to trick-or-treating every single year to these amazing houses. When I was 17 years old, I guess I just started decorating on my own.
And now she has a large collection of things that go bump in the night. She mostly purchased herself over the years.
It's a pretty expensive hobby, but it's well worth it. I enjoy doing it. This is my passion. I look forward to this each and every year.
As her collection grows, so do the number of people who come to the house to trick-or-treat on Halloween and look at the display. About 200 came last year.
I get a thrill out of people walking up the driveway, just their reactions. I really like, in the Halloween spirit, to scare people. When they get scared, it kind of makes me laugh.
Over at the Buffalo family home, the front yard has become a graveyard with zombies emerging from the earth. 13-year-old Will Buffalo has decked out the house with scary stuff.
And you can just let your imagination run wild, and it's the one time of year where you're allowed to sort of let loose and be kind of crazy and, you know, have some creepy, morbid stuff without people looking at you funny.
Halloween, or All Saints Eve, is observed in other parts of the world as a time to remember the dead. So for a Ukrainian family who put just a few decorations on their house, the celebration of Halloween in the United States seems peculiar. The family came to Alexandria, Virginia, 8 months ago.
I was surprised, but I like it. I think it's a good chance for us and our children to have a good time. So we decided to decorate our house with this hanged skeleton and traditional pumpkin.
So whether it's a simple traditional pumpkin or an extravagant display, everyone of all ages can enjoy the fun of Halloween. Deborah Block, VOA News, Alexandria, Virginia.
I'm getting more scared by the moment. Well, that's our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Isnalan Hapalan is a fugitive who was wanted in connection with the May 2001 kidnapping of 20 people, including three Americans, in Palawan, the Philippines. A Philippine citizen, Hapalan was born in 1966, has a thin build, stands 165 centimeters tall, and has black hair, brown eyes, and occasionally wears a slight mustache. He is also known as Abubakar Hapalan, Amahi Omar, and Bakal. Hapalan is a senior leader of the Abu Sayyaf Group, a terrorist organization operating in the southern Philippines that is also integrated with the worldwide network of Islamic terrorists. In this capacity, he was deeply involved in the May 27, 2001 attack on the Dos Palmas Resort on Palawan in the Philippines. 20 individuals were kidnapped in the raid, including three Americans, two of whom were killed. Sometime in 2013, Abu Sayyaf released a video in which Hapalan claimed to have officially broken up with al-Qaeda and pledged allegiance to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi and to ISIL, also known as Daesh. Hapalan was indicted in the District of Columbia for involvement in terrorist activities against U.S. nationals and other foreign nationals in and around the Republic of the Philippines. The Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to Hapalan's arrest or prosecution. The U.S. guarantees that all reports will be investigated and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the U.S. is prepared to protect informants by relocating them. If you have information on this man, contact the Regional Security Office at the nearest U.S. Embassy and the tip line at www.rewardsforjustice.net or email information to rfj@state.gov.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government. We'll be right back.